Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace. At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
On the program today, what one number, one very big number, can tell us about the prospects for this economy? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Tuesday today, the 7th of February. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We direct your attention today to Part A, Exhibit 1, of the Commerce Department's report this morning on U.S. international trade in goods and services. Run your finger down the page, the left-hand column, until you get to the line that says 2022, January through December. Then scan right just a little bit to find the trade gap for all of last year, $948.06 billion. We're going to round that to 948.1. There's a minus sign in front of it because over the past 12 months, we've bought way more stuff from overseas than we have sold. So what can that tell us about the economic state of play right now? Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is on duty.
Let's start with exports. American companies sold less stuff abroad as the global economy slowed down. Sharon O'Halloran is a U.S. political economist teaching this semester at Trinity College Dublin. She says exports have also been hurt by the strength of the dollar, which soared last year, driven by rising U.S. interest rates.
So that makes the cost of U.S. goods more expensive, harder for people to import those goods vis-a-vis buying a domestic Irish sweater.
On the flip side, imports to the U.S. have become more affordable for Americans emerging from the pandemic and shopping, says Joe Bruswellis at consulting firm RSM.
The U.S. consumer still remains resilient and is going to spend for cheaper imported goods.
The strong dollar's good for Americans abroad, too. Sharon O'Halloran's seeing it in Ireland.
A lot of people coming in, U.S. people with dollars buying homes or trying to set up different types of businesses.
All well and good for the U.S., except a strong dollar can also hurt a lot of players in the world economy, says Quincy Crosby, chief global strategist at LPL Financial.
It tightens financial conditions. It hurts emerging markets. The other thing it hurts is the S&P 500 multinationals. It makes their products and services more expensive.
Any signals from the Fed that U.S. interest rates will go higher and stay high for longer are likely to further strengthen the dollar and raise the trade deficit again. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Wall Street on this Tuesday. So Jay Powell did a Q&A today, about which more later. But traders did seem to like what he was saying. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. The artificial intelligence news of the day today comes to us from Redmond, Washington, where Microsoft rolled out its plans to incorporate the technology behind ChatGPT into its search engine, Bing. ChatGPT, of course, is the AI tool that can basically write your 10th grader's AP European history essay. Not that your child would do that, of course. Microsoft showed how the new and improved Bing can concisely summarize the GAP's financials, maybe plan your trip to Mexico for you, convert code from one programming language to another. But here are a couple of questions the new Bing may have some trouble with. What do AI chatbots mean for digital advertising, the very lifeblood of search? And what does it mean for the publishers who rely on traditional search traffic for eyeballs? Marketplace's Matt Levin has more on that one.
What exactly is stucco? What exactly is the debt ceiling? What exactly may be causing this rash on my elbow? AI chatbots look like they'll be pretty good at answering those types of informational searches with detailed summaries of content already published online, no link clicking required, which could be a problem for, you know, the people who made that content. Aaron Kessler is an analyst with Raymond James.
That is a negative for publishers. If the information you get is already delivered to you in this chatbot form, that takes away from their opportunity to deliver page views.
It could also be a problem for search advertisers and the companies that rely on them. I'm looking at you, Google. Oded Netzer at Columbia Business School says, with sponsored links less relevant in a chatbot environment?
We are probably going back more to the display advertising model, meaning we have an article and next to the article there are advertising, right?
Netzer says that may be less lucrative for Google. People are just more likely to click a sponsored link. He says he doesn't see traditional search disappearing immediately, though. That's partly because AI chatbots sometimes just make stuff up when they don't know the answer.
I think the biggest hurdle for search going away is the truth-telling.
Microsoft is including footnotes and links next to its AI chatbot to help users look up sources and fact-check results. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
A story now about trickle-down economics. Not the Republican fiscal policy kind, but the nonpartisan what happens in one part of any given industry can affect another kind. For us today, it's housing. As real estate continues to wallow a little bit, big picture, people in all parts of the home buying and selling economy are feeling it, including those who might be especially needed in a market like this. Stagers, the people who make your house beautiful before you put it up for sale. Alisa Roth has that story now from Minneapolis.
Chris Ann Evely is walking through this house in a sought-after neighborhood in Minneapolis.
But what's interesting is it already is pretty bright.
Yeah.
So I don't.
She's talking to the real estate agent and the homeowners about what she's seeing. And she's taking notes about everything, from the tone of the lighting in the family room to the red paint in an upstairs hallway.
And the peach is a little bit close to the color of the wood.
This is how staging works. Before putting the house on the market, the real estate agent figures out who might be interested in buying it. It could be a young couple with little kids or empty nesters who are getting ready to downsize. Then the staging company goes to work. Evely says her company, Stagecraft Home Staging, tries to identify what would make the space as appealing as possible to as many buyers as possible. And then she brings in pieces that'll help set the stage. That could mean something big and involved, like the time she went all out on a kid's bedroom with a giraffe theme. She brought in pictures to hang on the walls and a 6-foot-tall stuffed animal. Evely says it can also be small accents that just help create the right ambiance.
So we always bring brand new white fluffy towels. We'll usually bring a live orchid. We'll bring, depending on the size of the house, maybe some apothecary jars with bath salts in them.
Staging is thought to bring in more buyers, which in turn gets more and higher offers, and it's been part of the real estate business for years. Jen Killinan is a real estate agent in Minneapolis who's representing the sellers of this duplex. She's at this house with Evely for a walkthrough. She says almost all buyers start their searches online, so it's a little like online dating.
You make a decision so quickly on yes or no on a house or a potential date. You know what I mean? You're like, nope, nope, nope.
A slower housing market should make stagers even more sought after, because their magic helps make sure buyers don't just swipe past them. But Evely says the slow market is also making business tougher. For starters, there just aren't as many houses for sale.
We have fewer projects, so that's less top-line revenue coming in.
They're taking longer to sell, too. A house might sit on the market for a month or more, and it has to stay dolled up for potential buyers that whole time, which means Evely can't use the couches or orchids or stuffed animals in other houses.
So I cannot reuse that inventory as quickly. Even though I have, say, the same amount of inventory, I have less access to it because it's not going to be free in 30 days.
Staging isn't cheap. Real estate agents and stagers say it usually costs about 1% of the list price to get the house ready. So for a $300,000 house, that means spending $3,000 to fix it up. Jenny Norris is chair of the International Association of Home Staging Professionals. She's been warning members.
Pricing may become more of a factor because, you know, they're going to have to deal with sellers who are strapped or they only have a limited budget. They're concerned about how long they're going to have to pay.
Ideally, you keep staging up until the house passes its major milestones, financing, appraisal, and inspection, in case the sale falls through. Since stagers usually charge rent for furniture and other items they bring in, costs can add up quickly when houses sit on the market, and that can cut into the seller's profits. Meanwhile, Chris Ann Evely, the home stager, is looking for ways to cut costs. Over the last 6 months or so, she's sold off about a third of her inventory and given up several of her storage units. In Minneapolis, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
If you've been putting off starting your taxes because maybe you're looking for a new accountant, might we suggest you start making some calls? Accounting firms are a little short-handed right now. According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, more than 300,000 accountants and auditors have quit their jobs in the past 2 years. And not just tax accountants either. Firms are also short on the kinds of accountants who do financial planning and auditing of the books and all of the other stuff that accountants do. And yeah, part of that's the pandemic, but accounting's got a pipeline problem and maybe a branding problem, too. Marketplace's Savannah Marr has more.
So far this tax season, PricewaterhouseCoopers has enough accountants to keep up. But Rod Adams, head of talent acquisition, says finding them was harder than ever.
It's a concern. It's absolutely a concern.
Even for a massive company with lots of recruitment resources, smaller accounting firms like Mandy Irwin's in Chico, California, are having to turn away business.
Last year, we did have to let go of about 200 clients because we haven't been able to find the staff.
And the shortage of all kinds of accountants isn't likely to get resolved soon. Ben Lansford, an accounting professor at Rice University, says graduating students who might have pursued accounting a decade ago are going into investment banking, data analysis, and consulting.
Those jobs pay more and also don't require the fifth year of college education
that's needed to get a CPA license. Plus, those other professions are seen as more prestigious and more fun.
It's kind of a PR problem.
Adrian Gonzalez edits the accounting blog Going Concern.
There is that huge stereotype about how boring accounting is.
If the industry wants to compete, she says it needs to raise salaries and work on its reputation.
Nobody thinks about the accountants. They think about the accountants on April 15th when taxes are due. But there's this whole network that is, you know, the engine of the economy.
An engine that without the spark of a new generation of accountants could start to break down. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
Coming up.
The fact that they were able to sneak the shuttle through was a big deal.
NASA and the modern space race. But first, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 265 today, 0.75%, 34,156. The NASDAQ climbed 226 points. It's about 1.9%, 12,113. The S&P 500 gained 52 points, about 1.25%, 41.64 there. Lots of AI on this program of late. Everywhere, too, actually. So let's talk about that, shall we? First up is Microsoft, which we just heard about in Matt Levin's spot. It's up 4.2%. Alphabet, the parent company of Google, rose 4.6%. Chipmaker NVIDIA surged 5.1% today. Intuitive Surgical, which sells technology for robotic and minimally invasive surgeries, added 1.6% today. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note up 3.68%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling shipping supplies or promoting productivity programs, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/marketplace, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/marketplace now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/marketplace. Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this: it's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by public investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with public investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither public investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. It did not take long at all after China lifted its zero COVID policy at the beginning of December for public health experts there to estimate that hundreds of millions of people had become infected. Weeks was all that took. Officially, though, the central government in Beijing was reporting just a handful of deaths every day. Under pressure from the World Health Organization, China did start counting deaths from COVID-related causes, which has brought the death toll to 82,000 over the past couple of months. Not everybody, though, believes that is accurate, as Marketplace Jennifer Pack reports.
When China's leaders suddenly dropped zero COVID rules 2 months ago, a lot of people took extra precautions and stayed home, including an 83-year-old father in northeastern China. His son, David, only wants to use his first name in English to avoid government harassment.
My dad got a fever on December 19th. We don't know how he got infected with COVID. The fever lasted for 3 days.
The next morning, David's father fainted and hit his head. It took 7 hours before an ambulance came, and the hospital was chaotic, David says.
My dad's doctor and all the nurses were infected and coughing. He only saw the doctor once during his stay.
The hospital treated his dad's head injury, but had no antivirals for his lung infection. A second hospital wasn't much better. It ran out of oxygen.
I had to carry an oxygen tank from home to the hospital for my father.
David's father was moved to an intensive care unit in early January.
Within 36 hours, the hospital called to announce that my father had died. The death certificate lists the cause as respiratory failure.
which meant, at the time, David's father was not included in the official COVID death toll. David's angry.
What preparations did officials make these past 3 years? They only focused on mass testing and vaccines. There were no preparations at the hospitals.
And if hospitals were packed, so too were funeral homes.
The situation at funeral homes was horrible. There were no time slots for cremation, no space at the morgue.
In the end, David was able to get a time slot at a crematorium in another town. And the funeral was held 3 days after David's father died, according to tradition. But other aspects of his father's funeral were less than traditional.
Usually the body must also be cremated and the ashes buried before 12 p.m. Now, those rules have gone out the door.
And still, at that point, China was reporting just a handful of COVID deaths a day. That's because only people who die of pneumonia or respiratory failure caused by COVID are officially counted. For years, Chinese government media have criticized America's fight against the pandemic as an utter failure, with 1 million plus COVID deaths. But there's been very little public discussion of what China's own death toll will be. People who criticize Chinese leaders' handling of the pandemic are often censored, even detained. Why, I asked, did you take the risk to speak to me today?
China censors a lot of information. No domestic Chinese media would interview me, an ordinary man, about losing his father to COVID. I'm very glad to have this space to talk about it.
David says his dad was well-loved, well-respected, and well-traveled. A few days after we spoke, China tweaked its death toll to include COVID-related illnesses, but only people who died in hospitals and not at home. It's not clear if David's father's death is included in the new figure. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
You think space exploration today, you don't really think NASA so much anymore, do you? You think SpaceX mostly, Blue Origin too for suborbital hops. But the only reason they can operate the way they do, where anybody, or for now, anybody with the money can be an astronaut, is because NASA did it first. But NASA didn't always operate that way either. It wasn't until 1978 and the eighth class of new NASA astronauts that almost anybody could go to space. Meredith Bagby's book about those 35 recruits is called The New Guys. Meredith, welcome to the program.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
I want to go to the subtitle first. So the book is obviously called The New Guys, and then the subtitle is The Historic Class of Astronauts That Broke Barriers and Changed the Face of Space Travel. I want you to remind everybody what the face of space travel was before NASA's Class 8, would you?
Sure, sure. So prior to 1978, most or all astronauts were white male military pilots, and most of them were test pilots. And that had been the case since the beginning of the space program.
Was it then a deliberate choice? Was it forced upon the higher-ups at NASA? How did it come to be that they woke up one day in 1976 when they started the selection process for this class and said, oh no, we need people of color and women too?
It was a long process, but of course, in 1964, the Civil Rights Act passed, and through the late 60s and the 70s, increasingly there was pressure on NASA to open its doors to women and people of color, as it was the law, to include them. And then finally, in 78, they did, and part of the reason they did was that they had this brand new space vehicle, the Space Shuttle, mm-hmm. that could carry more than just pilots. And so finally, they did have room, even though women and people of color had already qualified as pilots. But this was a greater opportunity to bring more kinds of people on board.
So as we get to the space shuttle and this class, the new guys, who were not all guys, obviously, what is NASA thinking about its relevance and its future? Because obviously it had come through Gemini and Apollo, and Mercury had been amazing and all of that. And now they have this new thing they got to figure out, the space shuttle. But it's also a time when budgets are tight because of Vietnam and mm-hmm. people are, you know, it's the 1970s. Things were not great in this country in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. There was a much bigger plan for NASA after Apollo. They wanted to build a space station and they wanted to build lunar landing stations and they wanted to bring a fleet of shuttles into being. And because of the budget battles and the rotten economy, the only thing that squeaked by was the shuttle. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they eventually were able to get three of them and eventually the fleet expanded. But if NASA didn't get the shuttle, NASA's future was really threatened. And the fact that they were able to sneak the shuttle through was a big deal. But of course, the shuttle as a result always struggled. It had mm-hmm. a budget that was far too small for its very lofty ambitions. And this was baked into the program throughout. And because of that, they had to put a lot of their technical issues on hold or push them forward. And of course, that came to bear when the shuttle started flying. They had a lot more technical difficulties than I think anybody imagined they would, and ultimately got through a lot of them, but also had their first tragedy in the Challenger accident in 86.
Which, we should say, claimed the lives of four members of this class.
That's right. Yeah, this class was heavily impacted by that. Judy Resnick, who was the first Jewish woman to fly. Ron McNair, who was the second African-American to fly. Ellison Onizuka, who was the first Asian-American to fly, all passed away on that flight.
Okay, so look, this, you know, it's funny. I was flipping through the Wikipedia entry for NASA Class 8, and two things struck me. Number one, okay, this is going to sound terrible. How old some of these people are now, because they were born in like in the early 1940s, right? I mean, this was a long time ago that these people joined the astronaut program. Mm-hmm. But number two, what do you think their legacy is in terms of the NASA of today? Because NASA of today is, number one, yes, thinking about going back to the moon, but also arguably a good deal less relevant in spaceflight than it used to be. Hello, SpaceX.
Right. You know, NASA has turned over low Earth orbit to the commercial enterprises. But I think that the legacy of these astronauts was that they really created the face of modern space travel. And the idea there is that everybody can get to come along. It's not just military guys. Mm. And also how important scientists are. I mean, almost half of this group were scientists. But I mean, more globally, it's this idea that everybody can come along and everybody should come along, and broadening the idea of what it means to be an astronaut.
It's a book by Meredith Bagby about NASA Class 8, the class of astronauts that joined the astronaut corps in 1978. It's called The New Guys. Meredith, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This final note on the way out today, Jay Powell, as I said, did a question and answer thing today at the Economic Club of Washington, D.C. Pretty interesting, actually, if you're into that kind of thing. Anyway, he was asked about the debt limit. And just because everybody needs to hear this, here's what he said.
This really can only end one way, and that is with Congress raising the debt ceiling in a timely fashion so that the U.S. can pay all of its bills when and as due. That's what has to happen. And if that doesn't happen, no one should think that the Fed has the ability to shield the financial markets or the economy from the consequences of moving too slow.
That last bit, no one should think the Fed has the ability. All right, off we go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. Reports, it seems, of Bed Bath & Beyond's demise appear to have been maybe not greatly, but perhaps a little bit exaggerated. The beleaguered retailer's gotten a $1 billion lifeline to keep the doors open. For a while, anyway. Our digital and on-demand team includes Carrie Barber, Dylan Mietin and Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Ellen Rolfes, Virginia K. Smith, and Tony Wagner. Francesca Levy is the executive director of digital and on-demand. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too.
Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college accountant? How does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox, and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.